Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, maybe I surprised you. Good morning. It's good to see you here this morning. Maybe some of you are new here to LifeSpring, and we're wanting to let you know we're happy that you're here today to come spend time with us. If you're returning, if you've been a student, been out of town, welcome back. We're glad to have you guys back here today. There've been a couple of changes that you can probably see around the place. We got some rocks and landscaping done, but there's another change where we have merged with another church on the other side of town called Langston Church, and so now we are two campuses. So you may not see me here at the beginning of the service because I'm finishing up a service over there, and I have 8 minutes drive over here to get here. So trust me, I'll be here as long as GSU campus police are on campus. They just don't need to be on those fair roads and all those ways that I travel there. And if you're a police officer here, it's a black SUV Trailblazer, so just let it go. Charcoal gray, that's it. With the windows rolled down, they don't have an air conditioner running right now. That'd be me, my long hair flying out the window. So you're at LifeSpring Church, and one of the things, I'm the founding pastor of this church, and one of the things I was going to talk to you about today in our upcoming message series that we're doing right now is, it's called The Ripple Effect. Now, the ripple effect, you've probably heard that phrase used sometime or another. It's an effect that when something happens here, it just sort of goes out, moves out throughout the area and things of that nature. And I want to give you a little insight into where that came from and where that tagline came for our church. You'll see it on our banners. You'll see it on our cards. You'll see it on our stuff, the ripple effect, this little logo thing that we've made. And it came from, there's two parts that it came from. Prior to coming to this ministry here, I was doing what was called a boat church ministry in Lake Blackshear near Albany, Georgia. I had two churches there. One church service was on the lake, and the other service was on in the traditional setting. And the lake church, it was just a very big part of my life. Maybe 100 people on boats and stuff out there on the water, and then I would be on the pier, and then they'd be 100 people on shore, and I'd be sort of preaching. I could wear shorts. It was awesome. It's the greatest preaching experience I've ever had. And but the water influence had a lot of effect on me. And at that time, there was an artist that I was listening to, and when I say this name, I'm just sort of embarrassed, but Natasha Bedingfield. Has anybody ever heard of her? Yeah, so all the guys are going, you listen to that? Yeah, so anyway. But she had a song one time, and it's called Drop Me in the Middle. And let me read you the lyrics from the opening part of this. It says, I think I found the recipe of creativity. Put all you've got, and then add some heart. So it's like, do everything you can. Work as hard as you can, but you got to add some heart with it. They try to fence us in and break us down, but they still can't shut us down. The walls are thin, but we're still strong. We're broken, but we beat as one. And that song just sort of encapsulated what I felt like. You know, God is inside of me, and he's inside of a lot of other Christians, and he's inside of a lot of other people searching for Christ or searching for their way, or how do I live this out? And it seems like the world has just encapsulated us and tries to fence us in and keep us from doing things and tell us we can't do it. And it's like, well, we can do a lot, but we got to add some heart to it. And then she says this in the song. Drop me in the middle so I can make a ripple effect. Upon the oceans, I'll be the moon that turns the tide. Drop me in the middle so I can make a ripple, a domino effect, falling through the sands of time. You know, the Dalai Lama once said, just as ripples spread out when a single pebble is dropped into water, the actions of individuals can have far-reaching effects. Now today, you may think that there's not much that you've got going on in your life that could have far-reaching effects. But I'm going to try to show you through the scriptures that that is not true. Every decision that you make has a ripple effect. But what's at the core of the ripple? Now for me, when we display the ripple effect, for me it was like, if Christ drops into the middle of any situation, it's going to cause a ripple effect. Now, one of the things that I know from being at the lake, and I used to go sit on some friends' porches or on their docks and be out in the lake and just watching things and studying and preparing for scriptures. And at that time, preparing for sermons. And at that time, I was in seminary. So my mind was all thinking and all that stuff, reflecting and everything. But what would happen was, if you watch a ripple, when something hits in the middle and a ripple starts, that ripple will continue until it hits something. Now, if there's a pier or a column or something out in the water or something, it will go until it hits that. But here's the thing about, like, say it hits a post that a seagull might sit on or a bird might sit on. You understand what I'm saying? Sort of get that column in your head. When it goes out and it hits that post, it doesn't stop. It separates, goes around the post, joins back together, and then continues until it hits shore. So in other words, obstacles other than the shore aren't the things that affect it. It goes around them. It keeps going. And that's what I thought when we were creating this concept of LifeSpring Church and what we wanted to be was, if we drop Christ in the middle of any situation, no matter what barriers would come up, that would have ripple effect to transform and change things. It could transform the worst things that are going on in your life. It would, and then I said, well, what if Christ was in me, which is where I took this song to say, that drop me in the middle. If Christ is in me, drop me in that problem. Drop me in that situation. Because I can do a good cannonball. I'm telling you, God, you see how big I am? When I make a ripple, it is a tidal wave ripple. You understand? I jump in that water, I mean, it's, tsunami. I mean, they're hearing about it all over. But it makes an effect. And I thought, what if Christ's love was inside of me that much? And then what if we could group that together and call it church and have multiple ripples effects happening to change the world? Today I want to talk to you about a story that's in the Bible. And I want to show you how the ripple effect has played out to affect you today. So I'm going to take an Old Testament story, and I'm going to work it all the way to where you are right now. Right now where you're sitting, right now in your life, you are connected to this story. Now, one of the things that drops in there is Christ and drops in. But one of the things that affects a lot of what we do and the ripple that we make is our attitude. The attitude that you have about anything affects a lot of things. Would you agree with that? Turn to your neighbor and tell them attitude matters. Yeah, and then don't tell them they got a bad attitude this morning, because I'm telling you, we don't. Attitude matters. Attitude matters. I'm going to tell you, I'm embarrassed at some of the attitudes that I saw displayed in the last couple of days. And I wasn't going to pull this in. But you just can't help. The stuff that's happening in Virginia is crazy. It's crazy. And I've come to find out there's knuckleheads everywhere, even in our country. I used to think the knuckleheads lived everywhere else. They just wasn't. Well, I thought they were all in my family there for a while. But there's knuckleheads everywhere. And the color of their skin doesn't stop them from being knuckleheads. Do you understand? I'm trying to use kind words here. This stuff has got to stop. Do you understand? And it's time for the church to take its place. And the whole point that I'm coming from is the attitude about things can make a difference. The attitude that you have on how you view things and how you see things and how you see God and how you see this world will affect your actions. So this story that I'm going to tell you about, it's the Battle of Jericho. It's the prelude to the Battle of Jericho. Now, you may not know the story of Jericho. Let me tell you the story of Jericho. Jericho, back in the day, this is way before Jesus, way before David. It's way on back there. You understand? It actually goes all the way back to shortly, when I say shortly in the range of time frames, 40-some years, about 40, 41 years, after the Jewish nation had been delivered from 400 years of slavery to Egypt by these miraculous signs and wonders of God, or plagues, if you will. In fact, the last plague was that the firstborn of all people, firstborn male, would die unless they did this thing with some blood. We'll talk about that later, baby. So the Israelite nation came out of captivity, wandered around for 40 years, and got to the promised land. The Lord parted the water at the Red Sea. They come through it. Got all the way to this promised land 40 years later. Right there it is on the other side. Now understand that this river between Jericho and where the Israelites were camped is like only maybe like one of the major highways in Atlanta. Maybe one of those 16-lane highways. You understand? But it's pretty deep. So you can see from one side to the other. You understand what I'm saying about that part of the river where it was? And you understand that this Jericho had one of the most fortified walls that had ever been built at any time. In fact, the walls were homes built into the walls that surrounded this city. And it had not been penetrated by any conqueror at any time. And the Israelite nation has come up to this point, and they can see the wall. Like right across those 16, 20 lanes of traffic or whatever, which is water for them, right over there, you can see that. Like I'm thinking of Atlanta Airport. Has anybody been to Atlanta Airport? You know what I'm talking about? You can stand on one side and you can sort of see what's going over there. You can see that. If they had a party on the other side and all there is a river between you and them, you could hear the band playing. You understand? And you could see them. If they come down to wash their clothes, you could see them. That's what separated this one Jewish nation, was that water and the walls of Jericho from the promised land that God had promised them. So here's the story. It starts in Joshua 2, verse 1. So Joshua, son of Nun, secretly sent two spies from Shittim. That sounds good. Yeah. Had to do that one real quick there. So go look over the land, he said, especially Jericho. So they're going to look at the whole land but Jericho. So they went and entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. And that's just like a bunch of army men. As soon as you turn them loose, they go over there and try to get... And that's not what happened. They probably used that as their home base and would sneak out during the day or whatever. And nobody would notice if guys are coming in and out of a prostitute's home. You got me? So they entered the house of a prostitute named Rahab and stayed there. What's her name?
Rahab.
Say it again.
Rahab.
Okay. The king of Jericho was told, look, some of the Israelites have come here tonight to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sent this message to Rahab. Bring out the men who came to you and entered your house, because they have come to spy out the whole land. But the woman who had taken the two men and hidden them, she said, yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they had come from. At dusk, when it was time to close the city gates, they left. I don't know which way they went. Go after them quickly. You may catch up with them. But she had taken them up on the roof and hidden them under the stalks of flax that she had laid out on the roof. So the men set out in pursuit of the spies on the road that leads to the fords of the Jordan, right where the narrow part was. That's where they went. And as soon as the pursuers had gone, the gate to the city was shut, because the enemy's on the other side. So here's my question that I begin this message with. Why did this woman hide these spies? Why would this woman, a prostitute, hide the spies that they know are coming over there to spy out their land? That has their own king, that has their own stuff going on. Maybe they worship a different god. We've heard about that god, but we worship something different. Why would she hide them? And turn to King. Let's just think about this. What's her profession? Prostitution. Now, how did she get to be a prostitute? Did she finish up in her senior year of college, wherever she was? Did she go up and they had the little tables in the booths with the people interviewing and talking to them about career day? And they said, we got over here, you can be a doctor, you can be a nurse, you can be anything you want. And over here's this red tent, because they got a red tent set up over there, you know, with little, you know, and they say, but you can come over here and be a prostitute. It's a great life. People abuse you, beat you up, use your body as nothing. It's a great life. You can make enough money to maybe feed your family, maybe to live another day. Maybe you didn't come from a rich background like some of these other people. Maybe just come over here and be a part of this. I don't know how she got to be a prostitute, but I don't think she chose that as her career path. Maybe it was the circumstances in her life. Maybe she had a husband that died. Maybe she had some other things that go on. I don't know. But her only option under this king of Jericho under his rule and his system, and in these fortified walls that protect her every day, was protecting her to be a prostitute. I don't know how she got there. I don't know how she took that on as a profession. Now, rabbinic tradition, now this is in addition, this is other readings that go along with scriptures that the rabbis teach. They say that Rahab was one of four women mentioned in the scriptures whose beauty stood out. The other are Sarah, Abigail, and Esther. So why would this woman, who's got protection, she's safe, she has a home, she's good, but she's a prostitute. What if her mom and dad come to see her? You ever thought about that? Think they called before they came? The daddy says, let's go check on our daughter. You better call because I don't know who's going to come out of there. You understand? What about her brothers and sisters? You think they said, well, ma'am, you know, that's a good profession. You're doing a good job. I'm going to encourage you. You think she had really a lot of family ties? I mean, I'm just asking. Or do you just read the scriptures and not think? You don't check your brain out and put it on the shelf when you read the scriptures. God gave you that brain to reason and think and hear with your heart and your mind and all your reason, all your experiences. And my experiences told me that most of the time those families aren't very supportive of that profession unless they're benefiting from it. And that would be called a pimp. Like I know what a pimp is. That means. So why? I mean, it would seem like she'd have a terrible attitude to life. A terrible attitude. But here's something that Viktor Frankl said one time. Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of human freedoms, and that is to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances. And that's to choose one's own way. She had an attitude, I think. There's a better life for me. It doesn't look like it right now. It doesn't feel like it when all these men are on top of them. It doesn't look like it, feel like it, or seem like it. And I don't know how I got here. Maybe it's my poor choices. Maybe it's life situations. But there's hope for me. I have a hope that there's a place for me. And maybe she saw that hope in these guys from those Israelite nation. So what happens next? So where would I leave off? Did I read to, verse 8? Is that where I'm at? Oh, there he is. It's up there. Yeah. Before the spies laid down for the night, she went up on the roof and she said to them, I know that the Lord has given you this land and has a great and that a great fear has fallen on us so that all who live in this country are melting in fear because of you. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven and on earth below. See, I believe her attitude changed that moment. Her attitude of, I can't do anything, I'm a victim of my circumstances, my choices have caused me to be where I'm at. Her attitude changed. Her attitude changed because she sees God as her way. She sees this Israelite God. She sees that God as her way out of this living hell. This is her chance. She sees these men as God's agents that can provide for her. Here's my question to you. With your attitude of where you are right now today, if God provided you for a way out, would you recognize it? Or is your attitude blinding you from seeing the provisions that God is laying out for you, the hope that God is laying out for you? Listen, I was in college at one time, believe it or not, back in the dinosaur days. And back in those days when we were using abacuses and things like that to do our math and all, this old boy went to school thinking he was the man. Graduating the top part of my class in a large high school, but I get to college and it kicked my tail. You understand? To the point of, by the time I graduated, I'm not proud of this, but I'm just telling you the truth. 27 hours of what we call no cookies or NCs or what you would call Fs today. 27 hours. Now this group over here and these young people that are in college are going, how did you even get a degree? I'm not going to tell you my college. No, it was NC State. I flunked out. And then I got with my wife, Jody. We were dating before. We were dating through college, and I just blew everything. So I married Jody 6 months after I dropped out after my second year. And Jody and I were talking, and I just felt God was saying, I need to go back. My attitude changed. Now, Jody had a lot to do with this. Jody made the comment, now, you wasted your mom and daddy's money, but you're not wasting ours. If you go back, you got to give it your all. My attitude changed. Okay? My brain hadn't changed at that time. My grade point average definitely hadn't changed at that time. My ability to get scholarships or financial aid, it changed a whole lot. Now I had to work like a full-time job and go to school, where before I wasn't even hardly working. I did whatever, you understand what I'm saying? And what I worked, I spent it. My attitude changed. And I went from that one person that couldn't pass to making the dean's list. Now you understand that in order to get 27 hours of Fs to a C average, you got to have at least 27 hours of A's. And I went over and above that. Same man, same brain, different attitude. See, I don't know what kind of mess you're in now. I don't know what kind of situation you've got going on. I don't know what's going on in your life where you think there's no way out, but your attitude could be blinding you from the very thing God wants to see, wants to show you, or wants you to hear. And I happened to be in the right place at the right time, and my wife spoke that to me. And soon to be 35 years later, it's gotten us where we are today, of listening and having the right attitude to things. Remember what that guy said? Everything can be taken from a man but one thing. And that's the last of the human freedoms, and that is to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances. And doing that, you choose your way. You may be having some bad things going on in your family, some bad things going on within relationships. You may have bad things going on. May have health issues going on. May have other things. I don't know what's going on. But your attitude has a ripple effect on how you see what God is doing. And many of us are missing the miracle that He's already laid out for us because of our attitude. But this woman wasn't going to miss it. She wasn't going to be blinded by her life of being a prostitute. She wasn't going to be blinded if her family... She wasn't going to be blinded and be a victim anymore. She wasn't going to make excuses anymore. Her attitude changed. And she says that phrase, for the Lord your God is the God in heaven and above and on earth below. In other words, she can't even say yet, the Lord my God. But God's working on her. That's the movement of the Holy Spirit. So the men said to her, our lives for your lives. The men assured her. Is that right? No, excuse me, I got to go to verse 12. Now then, please swear to me that the Lord will... Please swear to me by the Lord that you will show kindness to my family, because I have shown kindness to you. Give me a sure sign that you will spare the lives of my father, my mother, my brother, my sisters, and all who belong to them, and that you will save us from death. What? They go on and they say, our lives for your lives, the men assured her. If you don't tell what we're doing, we will treat you kindly and faithfully when the Lord gives us this land. So she let them down by a rope through a window. For her house, or the house that she lived in, was part of the city wall. She said to them, go to the hills to the pursuers so the pursuers will not find you. Hide yourself there for 3 days until they return. And then go on your way. How many days did she tell them to hide? And where did she let them out of? A window, out the walls. You understand what I'm saying? But here's the thing. The first thing she thinks about may have been for herself. But the first thing she asked for, save my father and my mother. who may not have ever been to my house since I've taken up this profession. Save my brothers and sisters, and not only save them, save their families. This woman, who is maybe scorned by everyone, is standing in the gap saying, I know y'all going to take over. Well, it sounds like everybody in that whole city knows this. They're all melting with fear. I don't see them inviting the spies to their house. I don't see them lying to the king on their behalf. I see her in a difficult situation where everybody else is cowering down with fear, where everybody else is afraid, but you don't understand what it's like to have cancer. You don't understand what it's like to come from a divorced family. You don't understand what's going on between me and my loved one. You don't understand, preacher. Oh, they all understood they was afraid. But her attitude was, I'm not going to let fear stop me from doing the right thing. I'm not going to let fear stop me from having hope. I have the attitude of hope. And she took on that attitude, and then she seized the opportunity. She seized the chance. And then she says, not just save me, to hell with all them. They haven't cared for me. They didn't care what I did. She intercedes on their behalf and says, save my father and my mama. Save my brother and my sister. And give me a sign. Give me a sure sign of your word. Verse 17 says, now the men said to her before they went out the window on the rope, this oath that you made us swear will not be binding on us unless when we enter your land, you have tied this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. Now, what color is scarlet? Is that like that kind of red? Is that color red? Purplish red, sort of some dark, deep red, okay? So scarlet red, I don't know. I would have put like fluorescent orange like on the tennis balls. You understand? I'm going to put not just a scarlet thread or scarlet ribbon. I'm putting something like a 75-foot something around my window, and I don't care who knows, but I want you to see my place. And they're like, no, you just need a little bit, just this scarlet thread, that's good. Red, it's okay. Unless you put this, tie this scarlet cord on the window through which you have let us down, and unless you have brought your father and mother, your brothers, and all your family into your house, oh my gosh, how's she going to get them there? They ain't probably come. They haven't come in a while. I don't know, but she's going to go and say, you need to come to my house tonight. You need to be there. Something important is going to happen. Do you understand what I'm saying? If any of them go outside your house into the street, their blood will be on their own heads, and we won't be responsible. As for those who are in the house with you, their blood will be on our heads if a hand is laid on them. In other words, if you get them in the house, whoever's in the house, something happens to them, we take responsibility. Their blood's on our head. But if they stay outside that door, they're on their own. But if you tell what we're doing, we're going to be released from our oath you made, a swear. How are they going to know? Because the enemy will be ready. Agreed, she said, let it be as you say. So she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. She didn't wait till the next day. She didn't wait for a week now. She didn't say, let me think about this. Let me pray about this. You understand what I'm saying? That opportunity was there. Her attitude of hope. Her attitude was, this is my way out. This is what I've been looking for. This is God. This is what I'm looking for. I don't understand him. I don't know him as well as what these guys do. But this is it. I know hope when I see it. I know an opportunity to be different, to change. I'm tying that scarlet rope right now, that scarlet ribbon now. And she did. When they left, they went into the hills, and they stayed there 3 days. And the pursuers, until the pursuers had searched all along the road and returned without finding them, she even told them how to escape. You understand what I'm saying? She even helped them with kindness to tell them, don't just go out there and then come out in 2 days. I'm telling you, they're going to get you. I know the trend. They're going to search for 3 days, then they'll call the posse off. 3 days they stayed. They listened to her. They trusted her. This is a prostitute. This is a woman with no hope. But there's something that connected the two. And that was God. And the hope that they were both looking for. A promised land. The Israelite nation was looking for a promised land, but she was looking for a promised land. She was looking for a land where I'm not enslaved in these walls as what I am now. I want to be different. I want to be something that can make a difference. There's so much that I can do in this world. Maybe you feel enslaved by what is going on in your life that you can't do anything. Maybe it's money that's got you tied up. I can't do anything because I don't have money. I can't do anything because I don't have love. I can't do anything because I don't have help. I don't know what it is that's got you tied up. But it's got you bound up to where you've lost your attitude of hope. So when they left, they went into the hills. They stayed there 3 days. They followed her instructions. And then the two men started back. And they went down out of the hills, forded the river, which is exactly where those guys went to look for them. They went 3 days later. She knew where they were going. They forded the river and they came to Joshua, the son of Nun, who was leading the whole Israelite nation, and told him everything that had happened. And they said to Joshua, "The Lord has surely given the whole land into our hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us." And so they give this report. And their attitude changed. That wall didn't look as big as it did before. Do you understand? It's still a wall. Now, we know if you look through scriptures, you can see the story where God tells them to do some crazy thing like walk around the walls for 7 days. You know, just line up, walk around, play some music, and seventh day, walk around seven times, blow the trumpets. They're like, what? But they listened, and the walls came. How's it go? How's that song? And the walls came tumbling down. And the walls came tumbling down. What's that got to do with you? Rahab, at that point, was thinking exclusively about her immediate family and her. She ain't thinking about you. She's not thinking about you. She's thinking about me. I want a different life. I want something. But when she changed, a lot of things changed. See, it was a present tense request that she made. Can you do this for me now? But it had future tense ramifications. See, some of the things that we ask for God are going to have future ramifications, not just about now. See, let me explain this. She chose an attitude of hope in God for deliverance in a difficult situation. And according to tradition, she got it. Now, by the way, I just want to say a couple things. According to the rabbinic tradition, supposedly Rahab at 50 converted to Judaism and became Jewish. She fell in love with a guy named Salmon. Married him. And they had a kid. And that guy, Salmon, was from a Jewish tribe that was Judah, the tribe of Judah. And they had a son named Boaz. And Boaz had a son named Obed. And Obed had a son named Jesse. And Jesse had a bunch of sons. And one of those sons' name was David. They ended up being king of Israel. That's a ripple effect. The great-great-great-grandmother of King David was a prostitute. Already in the land. Already entrapped in the walls that soon God broke down. You tracking with me? And how did they break it down, Marcus? Marched around it, and what happened? Help me, come on, they can't hear you over here. And the walls, what? Where was that woman's house at? Luke, where was that woman's house at? Connected to the wall, because they tied a what in the window? A scarlet thing. How in the world does the walls come and tumbling down, and that wall doesn't fall on her house? You think that those guys knocked down the walls? God knocked them down, but he knocked them all down except for whose? Rahab. By the way, what color was that piece of twine or whatever? Scarlet. In the window. 40-some years earlier, just 40 years, maybe 41 years earlier, what had those Israelites saw in Egypt? It's called the Passover. They ate a lamb. They all brought their family and loved ones inside the house. They sacrificed the lamb. They took the blood from the lamb that's crimson color or scarlet color and did what with it? Painted it over the doors and what passed over people? The death angel. And if you are on the outside, what happened to them? And what happened to those on the inside? They were saved. This is no accident. This story is a ripple effect of the extreme things that are going on over here in Egypt. 400 years of slavery. This woman's in a life of prostitution. That's all they knew, and God delivered them. And then it's not just about the Jewish nation. He delivered a non-Jew. You're tracking with me? The thing they had in common was, we're slaves. We're broken. And we're pleading to God to give me a way out. And they're saved. Ripple effect. Can you see? Attitude matters. Oh, by the way, David ends up having children. And they have children. And they have children. And they have children. If you track it all the way back, they have one child, and his name is Jesus Christ, who hung on a cross and who bled scarlet and whose blood is now the replacement for the scarlet ribbon, for the scarlet blood of the Lamb, and is the blood of the Lamb that brings freedom to all people. And that ties to you today, because this is Holy Communion. We have the opportunity, thousands of years later, to remember all of these stories. To remember that this is a story about attitude of hope. That Holy Communion is about our attitude and our approach to coming to God and saying we don't have it all together. We're looking for a way out. Help me. You don't have to know everything there is to know. Your attitude just has to be in a place that you know it's God when you see God. And you don't miss that opportunity and play around on the streets while this group is walking around, marching around your walls thinking you're safe. You don't argue with Rahab when she says, come with me. I can't tell you why, but just come with me. There's something there for you. See, there's a world of people out there waiting for you to make that invitation to them to come and be a part of a church, to be a part of a family, to be a part of hope, to be a part of no longer living like this, but living a different way. And what's your attitude? You can't use me, God. I'm nothing. I'm just no better than a prostitute. I've been used up, worn out, taken advantage of. I don't have much confidence in myself. And God says, I'll take you right now in a heartbeat and put you on my team. I'll take you right now and I'll show you together we'll change this world. That's the ripple effect that Joseph heard. That's why he didn't run away from Mary when he found out she was pregnant. He ran to her. He could have done a whole lot different, but he didn't. His attitude was different. So the question is this morning, what's your attitude today? We're going to take Holy Communion here in just a moment. And you're going to have an opportunity to come and partake in a tradition and a sacrament of the church that has been passed on and passed down and passed around for decades, hundreds of thousands of years. Now that I said millions, I'm thinking it probably tracks all the way back to the Genesis stories, if you know the truth. I got to stop doing this. Come on, Dorsey. Come on. But I got to get it out of my head. Can I get it out of my head? Do y'all mind if I just get this out? Because I'm going to come back to this. I don't mess this up, but golly, Lord. Do you know when Adam and Eve sinned, they realized they were what? Naked. Prior to that, they didn't realize they were naked. What did they sew on their self? Fig leaves, right? What did God do for them? He, He made him clothes out of, it killed an animal that took blood and covered him up. This does track all the way back to Genesis. This goes all the way back. See, we keep trying to cover ourselves up with fig leaves and things like that, and God says, I got exactly what you need, but it's going to take blood. It's going to take life. That's what this is. That's what this is.